everybody. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back with you for the 65th. That's 65. That's how old you are when you get on Medicare. The Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition call. We are going to cover a very wide range as usual, and we're expanding our reach beyond just election protection issues. We are also welcoming the formation led by Joel Siegel and Tatanka Bricka of the Progressive Action Coalition, which is going to start to do serious political action, and Smart Aleck, which is going to be drafting legislation. Joel and Tatanka will tell you more about that. Again, I'm Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. I am actually driving right now from Cleveland, Ohio to Columbus. I'll be on the road for the next hour, and then somehow I'm actually driving by the town of Marion, which is the home of Warren G. Harding, one of our very worst presidents. May have been poisoned by his wife, by the way, for having an affair, but we won't go into that. We can later if you want to ask about that. We are also broadcasting on Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, my regular slot with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. So those of you on PRN, with the recording will cut off in an hour, and you can go to our website, electionprotection2024.org, and get the link and listen to the rest of it, as about 50 or 60 of you do every week. Our engineers, as always, are the great Mike Hirsch and Steve Caruso, our webmaster, and my co-convener is Joel Siegel, and we will be co-convened today as well by the great Tatanka Bricka, who is actually stationary and is a bit more visible than I will be for at least for the next hour. So we have a ton to talk about. We're going to start talking about the terrorism of the Trump regime, doing things that really have never been seen before in American history, to the extent of actually terrorizing the families of congressional and Senate candidates who don't support him. This has not happened before in U.S. history. There's a specific example that Joel Siegel will talk to you about. Anthony Gonzalez, a former football player for Ohio State, a very conservative congressman from rural Ohio, but just supported the impeachment of Trump, and his family is being terrorized by Trump supporters, and he's actually dropped out of the trying to get reelected as a congressperson. So Joel is going to talk to you about that. We're also going to have John Brakey from Arizona. Things are winding down in this insane recount. I hope we're going to be joined by Steve Rosenfeld as well. We're going to update the Georgia miracle, and we're going to talk about Tatanka Bricka is going to talk to us from California about the recall that got recalled, and also the Green New Deal. In about an hour and a half, we're also going to talk about gerrymandering in Ohio. There's a very a specific piece of legislation that someone who specializes in that is going to talk to in terms of the gerrymandering situation in the Buckeye State, which is really insane. And we're also going to deal very importantly with the Freedom to Vote Act. Joel Siegel will do that, as well as the John Lewis and the other legislation that's moving ahead way too slowly nationwide. So we got more than enough to keep us busy for the next hour and a half or 2 hours. As usual, we will go till 40 past the hour of 6 Eastern time with the recording. And then we will turn off the recording, and you can say all sorts of four-letter words you want. But while we're being recorded, we need to deal with the FCC regulations as if this does go on radio and into people's homes. So there you go. This is the opener. We're going to start now with the number one issue on our plate here, which is the Trump fascism. Trump terrorism, really, which has just surfaced this past week in Ohio. Joel Siegel, do you want to take it away and start the discussion on that, please?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're good.
We can hear you, Joel.
Hello, everybody. Thanks, Harvey. Well, Harvey and I had several discussions about Trump terrorism. There's really not an historical precedent for what we're seeing today, and that's where one out of three...
I think we lost. Yep.
Can you hear me?
Joel, your sound is going in and out. You may have to pull off the road.
Okay, I'll pull off the road right now. Hold on one second.
Okay, so the thing about...
Can you hear me better?
Yes, go ahead, Tatanka.
Yeah, yeah. While he was pulling out, I was just going to say it reminds me back to the very beginning when the business group he brought together basically came out, Trump's hand-chosen business group basically reported back to him that hate is a bad brand for business, is a bad brand for America. So he disbanded them. And, you know, you'll notice that every respectable professional football quarterback and NBA captain, and some of them have actually spoken out about this, the antithesis of leadership, not to accept loss and to basically have no accountability and to blame people around you. Just the antithesis of sports leadership and antithesis of leadership of the country. I just wanted to remind people of that.
Yeah, I want to make it clear, this is nonpartisan, but one sec, Joel. This is nonpartisan. We are not attacking this as Republican or Democrat. Trump is his own brand, and you know what he is doing here is unprecedented in American history. Go ahead, Joel, please.
He's trying to unmute.
Joel, are you with us?
Harvey, while he's doing that, you know, he did it to Raffensperger too. So, you know, it wasn't just Gonzalez. I just wanted to throw that in.
Can you hear me?
Yes, well, he's actually... Oh, yeah.
We can hear you now, Joel.
I mean, Trump is actually spending more time attacking Republicans, and it's not about... than he is Democrats, and it's not about policy. Doesn't seem to have anything to do with policy. It's only about, do they support him personally? Joel, go ahead.
Okay, so we've got a really serious problem on our hand. I use the word crisis. We've got one out of three people who work in the Board of Elections. They fear for their lives. Now, I can't remember my lifetime where people who work in an election cycle fear for their lives. Number two, you've got Gonzalez, who's a congressman Republican who's not running for re-election, because his life's been threatened at airports, on airplanes. This is very similar to the beginning of the Third Reich, or even Mussolini's, I think they were called brown shirts, where regular folks were basically paid to intimidate, you know, elected officials. Then you have McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, who basically said, if you're a Republican and you serve on the Democratic January 6th committee, you're gonna lose your chairmanship. Now, I worked at Congress a long time. I can't believe I'm seeing this stuff. The question becomes, we had Gretchen Whitfield, the governor of Michigan. There was a kidnapping attempt to kidnap and murder her. I don't really remember those kind of terrorism. Now we have Homeland Security, which is like maybe a $1 trillion budget or $700 billion or whatever, and they're supposed to be dealing with terrorism. I think we have the word is homeland. To protect the homeland, I think Homeland Security and the FBI are going to have a different strategy, and Congress is going to have to pass laws to deal with homegrown terrorism so we truly have homeland security. You can't do that unless you infiltrate these groups and arrest them and put them in jail. Unfortunately, that's not what they're doing. Now, if you remember COINTELPRO in the 60s and the 70s, that's where the FBI under Hoover's direction, which was one of those evil things that we've seen in our history, one of many, they infiltrated progressive organizations, especially SDS and civil rights groups, they broke them up. It's interesting how we use, you know, state power to break up progressive organizations that advocated peace, but radical right-wing white nationalist Jim Crow organizations were not doing that. And then when the FBI does try to bring charges against the Trump terrorists, they don't have laws to do that, because they'll say, well, we have the First Amendment, we have to protect the First Amendment. I think the First Amendment, very important, but not at the expense of, you know, allowing terrorism to go unabated. And we can't continue as a democracy if we keep allowing homegrown terrorism to threaten people who run elections and people running for Congress. I don't see anyone in the Republican Party condemning this. I hardly hear anything from the Democratic Party. I don't even hear that much from progressives, but we're gonna have to have a national conversation on how to deal with domestic right-wing terrorism. I'll close by saying, I don't see why the Nazi Party is legal. I don't see the reason why a lot of these paramilitary groups that espouse hatred and violence, why they're legal. I think there has to come a time we have to have a national discussion about outlawing the groups that specifically promulgate terror and hatred. That's very different than a right-wing group that talks about we're gonna have to lower taxes on the wealthy, or, you know, just espousing a political ideology. But if you're espousing hatred and terror and you have a track record of doing it, I don't think those groups should be allowed to assemble. Real simple. I don't, my great-grandparents and my grandparents fled Germany and Russia to get away from fascism and the fascism of the czars. I don't want to see that in my own country. But anyway, that's what I want to talk about. Thanks.
Thanks,
Joel. Tataka, do you want to chime in and then call on people?
Yeah, thank you. Very well said, Joel. I'll just call on Justin LeBlanc.
So, Joel, what you're talking about, a number of folks such as Emma Bryant from the UK and some of the folks in the Election Integrity, now I believe better called Election Quality, for the actual quality of it movement, have been studying. And that is a lot of how Hitler succeeded was he told such a big lie. Well, it had to have so many moving parts, it must have been true. And that is the way that Facebook and other places have been co-opted these days. You talked about Trump infiltrating different groups to kind of tear them apart. Well, if you pay influencers to spread messages and you read people's Facebook messages and you actually spy on your own constituents in order to tell them what they want to hear, then you can get that kind of Hitler-esque societal movement. And so at the start of the stopping people from organizing is the fixing how they organize online. And how you do that is by ending surveillance capitalism, starting with the freedom of speech requires a right to privacy. I don't want Facebook monetizing anything I share publicly, much less anything I share privately.
That's a very well stated, Justin. I want to suggest real quick, Tatanka, that two movies people can see that really outline what goes on in manipulation of the internet. One is the big, The Great Hack, really, you know, it's about Cambridge Analytica and Steve Bannon, who seems to be Satan personified. And the other is The Social Dilemma, which really deals with the commercial aspects of internet manipulation. Okay, Tatanka, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, well, we don't have any other hands up that I can see. I want to chime in.
Steven.
I want to chime in with Joel and say it's a very, very important. It's a very, very important discussion. We've started having this with Danny Sheehan and folks at the Romero Institute on the constitutional end of things, but very, very important. Jed, your hand is up.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to remind everyone that the social media, beginning with Gmail, if you read your Gmail terms of service, any of us here who might have been on the Gmail pilot project when they started it, if you read your terms of service, you'll see that they've been monetizing everything since Gmail started. So expecting Facebook or any other group to not monetize the data that we provide them is not the situation. What we can do is, I'll drop a link in the chat in a little bit. What we can do is defuse disinformation, and of course we can regulate the hell out of all social media. I'll let it go from there. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed. Yes. I just want to remind Harvey and Joel that I have the order of what we're doing, but I have no time frame on it. So we're just going to move ahead, and if we go over time frames, somebody needs to clue me on that.
Tatanka?
Yes.
Okay, go right.
Yeah, this is Steve Caruso. Ahead, yeah, Steve. We had, Bob Fitrakis just came out with a co-work book on the history of hate in Ohio. And I'm about 3/4 of the way through it. And what this movement, that the fascist movement in Ohio, was a very few people that got attention. And the whole thing was just as minor as could be. And I think it's the same way here in the United States. But yet these guys get all the attention, they get all the power that they want through that attention. And it's unwarranted, completely unwarranted on the face of what people in this country really want. And that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Well, these two movies, The Great Hack, is really about the political manipulation, and The Social Dilemma is about the monetization of the internet and of social media, and they're both really worth watching. Okay, thank you.
Okay, yeah, those are both great movies. Very important for everybody to have seen. I think we're going on to part two, which is John Lewis voting bill, and Joel's going to lead us in that discussion.
Yeah. So in terms of the John Lewis voting bill, it was passed in the House. And it's supposed to be taken up in the Senate. The problem is there's only one Republican who supports the bill. Every Republican House member voted against this bill. And remember, this bill just restores the 1965 Civil Rights Act. So look at how serious this is in terms of, kind of a Jim Crow white nationalist Republican Congress. And I mean, that's what they are. If they don't want to even have a federal law that Black and Brown and Native Americans and students from voting in election, we really are in a very serious right-wing period where fascism and Jim Crow is what the Republican Party is where we're at. And if we do not figure out a strategy on a Jim Crow Republican Party, then we're going to be living and counting jelly beans in the 21st century and poll taxes. This is really where we're at. I don't see a national discussion, even among progressives, about a fight back strategy. That's why this Progressive Action Coalition is very important. Are there incredible groups that are doing incredible work? Absolutely. Without them, we wouldn't be where we're at. But is this bill going to pass in the Senate right now? No, it will not pass in the Senate. I did some research about reconciliation and could they use reconciliation? The answer is no. And I'll have a national discussion among progressives and do whatever peaceful means necessary to pass this law, or else we're going to have even more of these voter suppression laws passed. I think it's 18 states have passed 30 voter suppression laws, which the only reason why they're passing them is so Republicans can win their elections by ensuring that people of color, especially Black people, can't vote, making it very, very difficult for them. Now, there is a new bill that has been introduced, which is basically Joe Manchin's bill. And it's a good bill. It does outlaw partisan gerrymandering, protecting early voting and drop boxes. It has nothing in there about pre-clearance from you know, the Department of Justice. So if the state's passing an onerous discriminatory law, they'd have to get, you know, permission from the Department of Justice. That is not in the bill. And I think that's another question that progressives have to raise. Why is that not in the bill? You know, so we're in a really serious situation where democracy is absolutely being threatened by a white nationalist Jim Crow movement. And unless we deal with the who's funding these Republicans in the Congress, who's funding them on the state level, we're gonna have to engage in civil disobedience, protest, press conferences, national town hall meetings. None of that, which is that I can think of, is happening right now. And I'll close by saying, I don't think that the general public understands these laws, and I don't think they really understand the problem either, because there hasn't been a real national campaign to, you know, confront the far right wing on voter suppression. Commercials, marches, protests, press conferences, lobbying days, boycotts of members of Congress, states that are, you know, allowing this to go on. But for some reason, I don't think people really view this as a top priority problem. And that's why you need to have a campaign. So that's kind of pretty,
Thank you,
there
Joel.
There are a lot of reports now about the Freedom to Vote Act, which someone asked about in the preamble here. And that apparently is a bill that Joe Manchin has signed on to, but at the same time, he hasn't signed on to getting rid of the filibuster. So do we have any idea what's going to happen with this Freedom to Vote Act? And also, Howie Hawkins, if he's on the call, has something to say about that in terms of campaign financing. If Howie's on the call, Tatanka,
yeah, we've got Paul up first, and then Howie. And I do want to say, going back to your point earlier, this is a nonpartisan discussion. When we talk about Republicans, we're talking about basic decency. We're talking about ethical issues. And if there's one thing I think the left needs to expand to and learn from history is, for instance, the role of the Chautauqua movement taking on the robber barons in 1870 to 1890, which it was at that place, actually started by the Methodist Church, you know, first offering social studies, offering teachers in the Methodist Church a free vacation. And then they were talking about actually Christian values and lining it up against the robber barons and calling them anti-Christian. It spread from there to all social studies teachers. And this became a place where the Susan B. Anthony's, the progressives of the era gathered, and every weekend they would have cultural events. It was like a mini Woodstock every weekend. And this is really where the seeds of the women's movement, the environmental movement, the labor movement came from. So one of the lessons there is that this has to be not just a political discussion, it has to be an ethical discussion. And we can involve a lot of people in the discussion about what are the basic ethics we need to function as a free democratic society. Takes it totally out of anything partisan. It just really addresses the nature of the banality and of the violence and of the, you know, some would call it evil we're talking about. Okay, first Paul and then Howie.
Hi everyone. Thanks, I'll make it short. Just follow up on Justin's point. A wonderful film touches on exactly what Justin was talking about, is Salt of the Earth, the 1952 piece Paul Jericho and others wrote. And in particular, reading about the Jenks Act, which a terrible piece of legislation that, you know, sort of, as I see fit, could get in the way of things, that was, you know, requiring production of documents and naming of one's informants under testimony, you know, certain long line. Salt of the Earth is a great film involving the intersection of three things: the union labor movement, the role of immigrants, a Latino and an Anglo, and also gender, women and men. It's just a trio of things going on there. Just, I put links to the YouTube link movie, you can see. You know, mind the ads, of course. That's it.
Thank you, Paul. That's a classic. Okay, Howie, you're up. You're muted, Howie. You're muted.
We should support the Freedom to Vote Act. Doesn't have everything for the people had, but it has a lot. You know, it eliminates partisan gerrymandering, voter suppression, the election flipping the Republicans are putting in their state legislatures, measures against intimidation of voters and election administrators, makes it easier to vote, 15 consecutive days, early voting, automatic voter registration, same day registration, election day as a holiday, disclosure of dark money, all that's good. But what I wanted to bring up, which there's been no reporting on, is that it eliminates a major post-Watergate reform. It eliminates public campaign funding for presidential candidates. And, you know, the idea was the presidential candidate shouldn't be dependent on the ultra rich, but they totally eliminated and folded into a pilot program for House, you know, public funding, which is really token. It's really not much of a program. So, you know, I want to make people aware of that. You know, it's really only the Green Party that uses the matching funds program. The major parties don't use it because if you accept public funding, you're limited to spending $52 million in 2020 on your primary campaign. And then there was a general election grant, which, you know, Obama didn't use in 2008 because he could raise a lot more money. McCain was the last one to use it. So they're not using that either because they're running with hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, the reform should have been increase the public funding. Instead, the Democrats have folded into this a bill that Joni Ernst, the Republican senator from Iowa, had for a long time, and that is eliminate public campaign funding. So in the Green Party, we're asking that the public funding section of this bill just be cut. You know, if Manchin's trying to get 10 Republicans, he's not going to get any if there's public funding in it. But, you know, in contrast to what Joel just said, I think we got focused on the Democrats. The Republicans are irrelevant. They're not going to vote for it. It's the Democrats negotiating with themselves, and that's Manchin, and that's a filibuster. And Schumer said last week they're going to vote on it this week. So anyway, I'm going to put in the chat a link to an article I wrote in Counterpunch about this and a you know, one of those automatic letter things the Green Party has you can send to your senator about getting rid of this elimination of public campaign financing for presidential candidates. So
thank you, Howie. That's really, really important. I mean, and a reason, major reason why most people don't vote is that they perceive correctly that most politicians are bought. I mean, it's really turned into an auction for, you know, that's what our voting, except for the progressives that refuse that sort of corporate donation. It's really, really important to have a conversation about. So I'm glad we're bringing it up, and we need to continue this. I had another point, but I forgot it. Anything you want to say on that, Sluggo?
Yeah, I mean, the question that becomes now for those of us who want this bill, some kind of bill to stop this avalanche of disenfranchisement that's going on is, will the Democrats use a carve-out on the filibuster to get this? Because clearly none of the Republicans, or maybe one or two, and will vote for it. And people have to understand this is unique in American history. You know, we tend to assume now that the Republicans are all one way. That was not always the case. In fact, it was Republicans that forced Nixon out of the White House. So the question then becomes, we finally got a piece of voter registration and other aspects of federal bill that Howie has laid out here with a lot of good stuff in it. How are they going to get it through? There's no way that more than one or two Republicans are going to vote for it. If that, are they going to use the carve out? Are they going to use the budget exception? How do we get this put into law?
Great question. It's really interesting. We really need better research too on what happened to Joe Manchin. I know his campaign war chest for the 2018 election was $2 million. it shot up to 8 million. A lot of that money was real estate people, but it's just, and it, that's the same amount of money shot up in McConnell's chest. But finding out what is behind Sinema and Manchin and them, you know, not playing the role as a Democrat should play is an ongoing question. I think the one quote we can use from Trump in all this voter suppression stuff is his own words, quote, "If we let all Democrats vote, no Republican would ever win another election." And also the history about Republicans have not been winning elections. They haven't won the popular vote except maybe once in 2004. And you can even argue that the switch on the voting machines with Diebold and others was compromised there. So really in our lifetimes, I mean, since Nixon, I don't know that there's been a Republican that is fair and square won the presidency. So they need to rely on voter suppression. That is their MO, and it's easy to prove. So the question becomes, do we really believe in democracy? Do we believe that every person has a right to vote? Or have we gone back to 3/5 and 1/2 and, you know, rule of thumb to beat women? And I mean, what's it going to come to? Okay. We have Ruth Strauss and then Joel Siegel. Ruth, you're up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I wish it were as simple as, and I'm not, you know, putting anything down, but as Sinema and Manchin. I just heard that this week that there are 4 Democrats who voted against Medicare negotiating for drug prices. So, you know, I'm just saying that we can't drop the ball with any. And one of them, I think, was Chris Murphy. And I thought that he was like, you know, on the right side of history. I guess he literally is on the right side of history now. But anyway, it's just saying that, you know, we can't take any Democrat for granted either. Thank you.
Yeah, you're right. And the role of corporate funding in these votes is highly suspect. You know, big pharma is big real estate, big oil. Joel, and then Jamie, friend.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, the Democratic Party has to take a stand. That means the state Democratic organizations, which they have not on the filibuster. It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, reconciliation bills or... Unless we eliminate the filibuster or do carve-outs, it's going to be hard to pass anything because you have to. And of course, you know, you got to push back against Democrats.
Going in and out, Joel.
What are you saying?
All right, you got to move on.
Okay, we've got to move on. Sorry, Joel. Jamie, you're up, and then we'll go on to the next topic.
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much for taking my question. I just wanted to make 2 points. I think that, you know, attacking the Democrats won't help, but putting the public pressure on those that are funding the movement for the Jim Crow issues, I think that's where we're going to find the success. If we can get a comprehensive list of the organizations that are funding the Jim Crow supporters, and we can get that directly to the public bypassing the Democratic Party, that would be probably the most powerful impact we could make. And on that, this October 2nd is the perfect opportunity for the intersectionalism. It's the National Day of Marching for the Reproductive Rights of Women. So there are marches scheduled all across the country, and there's also going to be incorporating, you know, voter suppression and voter registration. So this is a perfect opportunity for us to speak at, you know, to select members of this group here can try to speak at these things and get the word out about who is funding them. And so thank you.
Thank you, Jamie.
Tell us more about this march. This is the first I've heard of it. You're saying it's October 3rd?
No, Saturday, October 2nd. Saturday, October 2nd is called the March for Women's Reproductive Rights. And I think right now there's already 147 marches scheduled. I'm not completely sure, but I do know that it's national. It's across the country. It's probably organized by the Women's March, who were the original organizers back in 2016 or 2018. But yeah, what a great opportunity for everybody. And they're already going to be incorporating speakers about voter integrity and voter suppression. So it'd be a great opportunity if we could get some real solid information about who's funding this. I think that would be a great opportunity.
Yeah.
Well, if you can get us someone, one of the organizers of that march or more to join us next week, we'll be glad to feature that, as much information as
okay,
we can.
Okay, and if I can get that the person, who should I put them in contact with?
Me. It's Harvey Wasserman, solartopia okay, we'll at Gmail.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Good point. And, you know, just a reminder that we have Kristen Sinema, new African-American president of NOW, on our leadership now, along with Dolores Huerta. So I know they'll know about
Christian Nunez.
Christian Nunez. Oh, my God. Sorry about that. Christian Nunez. Thank you very much. That's funny. Arizona update. I think we have John Ray Lux and Steve Rosenfeld, but I think John's going to lead it off. John Brakey, John Brakey.
Hi, everybody. It's good to have my voice back, meaning that I can talk a lot more about what's going on in Arizona. As you all may know, on the end of this week, the public results are going to be coming out, and that's going to be at 1 o'clock. And the presenters are going to be Doug Logan, Ken Bennett, surprising enough, Dr. Skiba, which he's going to be talking about the ballot signatures that he did some testing on, and I'll let Ray Moore go more into that or whatever, and then also Randy Pullen. Inside-wise, we know, and I can't say sources or whatever, but Patrick Byrne would be a good source to contribute this to, is that the results are going to be very, very close. And what these people are trying to do is move their grift. It's no longer, it's not the vote that counts. What they would like to say, it's the canvas. And a lady named Liz Vogt Harris is probably one of the major people in my state who've been pushing this audit, is claiming that 173,000 people who voted had their ballots destroyed and it wasn't counted, and that there are 73,000 zombie voters, okay? And they tried to go ahead and claim that's because it's not happening at the count. And I don't believe the Senate is going to accept any of that stuff because, you know, pretty much we've exposed them. And by the way, when Liz Harris put her, and that's her Facebook site, you can go there. When she put it out, she said, gee, we found a lot that 20 people voted from. Well, she didn't check to see if they actually voted. It used to be an RV park there some years back, not far back. The house that they said that there was a lot that nobody, there was no house there. It was the wrong side of the street. And so she's kind of like disappeared in the background. We're hoping that this thing is going to end well enough. And I know that I'm going to be there. Ken Bennett will be presenting. He's my good friend. I hope that he will come out and we'll talk about the Arizona miracle. The miracle is that we now realize that elections aren't any good unless they're transparent, trackable, and publicly verified. And what we really need to do is take the needle out of the haystack and take the haystack and turn it into a ballot library. And because of the July 28th memo from the federal government, from the Department of Justice that came out, all ballot images must be preserved in all records. These records could be released publicly in a lot of states because they are public records. And then you would be able to do an audit and then take a couple of those images from your audit and say, I want to look at the original ballots, because they will be married to the image by a number. That doesn't mean they know how you vote. We have to remember the actual act of voting is the secret process. Counting is the public process. If we're going to fight the cynicism that is destroying this country, you know, that last video that just came out a couple of days ago by the Lincoln Founded Group, they really nailed it with the statistics of what people really believe in this state or in our country overall. And we have to have elections that we all can believe in, publicly verified.
Well, I would say a big part of the Arizona miracle is that you and Steve Rosenfeld and Ray Lutz were actually in Arizona. That made a huge difference. Steve Rosenfeld, I think, is with us, Tatanka. Steve, did you want to add to John's report?
Go ahead, Steve.
Sure. Thanks, everybody. So I have some of the same sources as John and some slightly different ones, too. I'm not as optimistic as I was late last week. So I wrote a report on Friday. It was the first one to come out to say that the main funders of this were throwing shade on this by saying that as sort of a way to discredit what was going to be the findings, which were that Biden won, and maybe they found a couple hundred votes for Trump, although that is to be disputed because we know that they didn't look in certain categories of adjudicated ballots because that involved records that they didn't work with. But anyway, what's happened since then is that, and I was told by this by somebody who was sitting at the table with the cyber ninjas, you know, review team at in the Arizona legislature. The lawyers there didn't want to include some of the crazy disinformation stuff, like John was talking about this Liz Harris canvas claiming there's nearly 300,000 made up votes. They didn't want to include the crazy chase for bamboo by this guy, Joe von Pulitzer, because it's just not based on anything that's factually accurate. But what I've heard in the last day is that I don't know if Ken Bennett is going to be there on Friday. In fact, I heard an hour ago he's not going to be there. He's going to come in by Zoom. So you're going to have the cyber ninjas guy, Doug Logan. You're going to have Dr. Shiva, who the mainstream media missed this. I wrote about this. He tried to conduct what was going to be the second complete recount. The ninja's hand count, which was widely covered and discredited, was the first. Shiva tried to do this and he failed. He claimed he couldn't open 40% of 2.1 million ballot images. And he blamed the county, and the county says, this is ridiculous. You have the data, they open. So the point is, the people who have already said that all this disinformation are gonna be sitting at the table in the Arizona State House, and they're gonna try to say that no election results are trustable or knowable. And then they're going to try to get into the weeds and continue to perpetuate the doubt. And the truth is that, you know, there, you know, Don will be there, I'm going to be there. Some of these outside experienced auditors like Larry Moore, who created Clear Ballot, him and his team, they went through all the public records to try to entrap the ninjas to prove that the public records are accurate. He's going to be there. But how many people will get on TV and try to balance this out? And it's because there's going to be this wave of disinformation where Biden won, but they can't trust that because of all this made up stuff, which they've been throwing out for months. So that's really what's going on. And you know what happens there is very, very critical for the way this continues in other states. Because you've got people doing copycat versions of this in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, and elsewhere. So, you know, I just want to say one final thing. If John had not been inside and become friends with Ken Bennett, there would have been no chance whatsoever, zero, that the brakes would have been put on these guys to know that people were watching them from the inside out. And then if Larry Moore and Benny White, who's a Republican, but doesn't like what the Trumpers are doing in their lives, had not been working from the outside to actually show that the public records do exist to actually prove that the results were accurate, these guys would not be so, they would not be as backed as far in a corner as they are and turning to like this like crazy disinformation as much, because they'd be because we've been debunking their false claims. But anyway, this is where things stand now, and it's kind of day by day. We'll see what happens on Friday, and you know, I'll just leave it there. So basically what you've got is this is coming to a crescendo, And I've been told by people at the table, they're not going to add the crazy conspiratorial stuff in their reports. But then the people who are telling me that, I may not be in the room, and people who have said the crazy stuff are going to be sitting at the table. So that's where it's at.
Wow.
And Steve, you'll be there. Are you going to be there personally, Steve?
Yeah. I just booked a plane flight. I mean, I have to be there. And, you know, John has to be there. And there have to be a handful of people that are going to be there who can walk up to the television cameras. I mean, I can't do that because I'm a reporter, but and say, hey, not so fast. But I can tell other reporters, hey, talk to this guy, talk to that guy. So that's what will be happening. Well,
fantastic. We owe you guys a great debt. What you did in Arizona.
If I could just jump in.
Thank you.
Friday is very important. And you know, the message that finally that I want to put out to people is that millions of dollars have been fleeced from the Trump sheeple over the big lie. How do these drifters milk the Trump sheeple? They pretend to know what they're talking about and become parrot election integrity people using stuff that we wrote 20 years ago when we were beginning. And, you know, and what it's pretty easy to do this as a drift if you have a sitting president who also is arguing that it was stolen, backing up the grifters. There may have been millions of dollars taken from people who really believe that we're going communist, and all the big lies that are said by these drifters is outrageous. And so being involved, I hope people follow the model that we did, ignoring people and letting them go off into their own world and tribe is not a good thing. You have to talk to your uncle. You have to help people understand, because in life, it's so much better to understand than be understood as an idiot who followed a guy with an orange face and his drifters. Thank you, Harvey. It's been great. I'm glad I got my voice back. I hate it when I cannot tell everything I know, because I'm a talker. But if somebody tells me I can't say this or that, I get confused and don't know what I can say. I hate that. I'll never get this in close again for that reason.
Well, I also want to chime in and thank you, John and Steve and Ray, because the persistence you've shown is amazing. It's almost like we really need a major, major story, a major news outlet to do like a, you know, a 1 hour story on your point of view so that we can really get this across what's happening.
Well, you know, Tatanka, this is Steve here. You know, the thing that's really going to be outrageous, if you really reduce everything down, some of the Trump cheerleaders are basically saying the election systems are so backwards, the technology is so screwed up that it works no better than an old fax machine. That's literally on the on tweets by this guy, Joe von Pulitzer. That is completely not true. Yeah. There is more data, detailed evidence trails from the ballot handling procedures all the way through the finish line of the counting. Now, the thing is, it has to be turned on by election officials and the records have to be kept, but it is there in the newest generation of election machines and election systems. And if you know how to use it and present it like 2 weeks after election day, you know, you can have explanations for why your one side loses a close race. You can go in and say a majority of these ballots are Republicans, except 60,000 of them in Maricopa didn't vote for Trump, which is what some of these people found by looking at what's called the cast vote record, a giant spreadsheet of every vote and every ballot. And there's other stuff that you can show that they weren't creating phantom votes from outer space or China, because you can compare the list of people who voted, which all the political parties have, to the actual voter registration lists and see that, you know, 99.9% of the ballots that were counted came from legally registered voters. 40,000 of them just didn't pop up out of nowhere. But the election administration officials, the Democratic Party lawyers, and most journalists don't understand this, don't use this. And we're talking about public records. We're not talking about exit polls or, you know, like polling. We're talking about 100% complete accounting of the votes and the evidence trail that follows, available 2 weeks after the election. Yeah. Imagine if this was public and it was out there on November 15th or November 25th, you know, by Thanksgiving. So, you know, that's part of like the big picture here of like, you know, where things could go in a more perfect world. But honestly, the data and the records are there if we only had them available and more people knew how to use them. That's what's most astounding to me.
So this story, it
seems, wow, fantastic. Clear,
seems clear to me. You have a kind of a bipartisan, in a way, consensus opinion that this process does work. It's verifiable. All this information is available. If you take out the rabid right wing and the money and the cyber ninja money and story, the people would understand. But with it, and with the motivation that they basically are an anti-democratic force now. They've admitted, their leader said, if we let all Democrats vote, Republicans would never win another election. So what they're left to do is to destroy the democratic process, is to make people not believe in voting and to get people off the voting rolls who don't agree with them, the black, the brown, the young, the old, et cetera, the students.
Yeah, and these messages, by the way, are coming primarily through right-wing or pro-Trump media, Fox News, and other channels. And basically, that's why you've got, it might be 30% of the overall population, but 70% of Republicans thinking that the last election was stolen, because it's been, they're just repeating this stuff over and over again. And it's not just that the last election was stolen, it's also that Trump had no responsibility or role in the insurrection at the Capitol.
Of course. Okay, let's go on to some other questions.
Well, but the insurrection, you know, the insurrection in these people's minds, it was just kind of a tourist group that dressed up as with antlers on their head and kind of walked around the Capitol looking for people to kill. So, you know, there's a whole other reinterpretation, obviously, of this insurrection that's also critical. Thank you, both John and Steve. I don't know if Ray's on the call. But incredible work you guys have done. Just truly amazing.
Okay.
Susan asking questions. Susan Sarandon, by the way.
If Ray isn't on the call, Mary, we have Mary, and then Justin, then Susan, then Jeffrey.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out that it's starting to happen in Washington State, but if you don't have your vaccination paperwork, you can't get into a lot of government offices to put your opinion out there more and more. Washington State is so Gaddafi with the mandatory vaccine that people are actually getting in trouble with the law. Everybody that's tried to get exempt is not getting exempt.
Okay. That's a little bit off topic. We'll try to circle back to that.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. That's a good other topic to discuss. Justin, you're up.
All right. Sorry, my video is straight in here. Hold on. But anyway, so to John Brakey's point about information and specifically Stephen Rosenfeld about evidence trail. So Dominion is at the center of a defamation lawsuit, and my belief is that the reason for that is that they actually have a better evidence trail than ESNS. And so while Raffensperger from Georgia can stand against Trump and say, we know that this was actually handled correctly, Trump and his social media machine are actually going and saying, no, see, look, Dominion is the enemy of the people because they had some guy in their ranks who was pro-Republic or pro-Democrat, right? And he wants to get rid of all Republicans. So therefore, it has to be all false results. No, actually look at the evidence and you'll see that these paper trail does prove who that the Democrats generally won in these close contentions.
Yeah. I would agree with that about Dominion. What makes their software better, it's because of how they do the ballot image and the cast vote record are actually connected. So it's a three page. The first two pages, front and back of the ballot, then you have your cast vote record. And then from there, they wind up doing electronic adjudication. And it's shocking how many people who vote by mail will write in Joe Biden, and then they will, you know, fill in the bubble and say, I vote for Joe Biden, and then they'll write in Joe Biden or vice versa. It could be Trump. That's an overvote. And if you don't look at it, that's no vote. You've lost your vote. It has to happen. And ESNS does not have a very good electronic adjudication process, but I do know that they're on the verge of coming out with one to keep up with Dominion. So very observant. I would agree with that.
Great. Good response.
I would just add to that that, you know, in San Francisco where I live, which has a Dominion system like Maricopa County or Phoenix, they have more advanced software that they use in San Francisco, and they turn on all of these optional modules that actually trace the data through from the paper that as it's scanned all the way to the finish line. And it's really remarkable to see it. But the downside of this is it's not turned on in every place, and all these features have not been bought or acquired in this privatized voting system world by a lot of these big municipalities. But it's not a made up idea or a hope, that the technology is there. And it's remarkable. And John and Justin is right, that, you know, Dominion is more transparent, and it's less work to, you know, you think of what's the starting line? You mark a ballot somehow, paper by hand or by machine. Let's not argue about whether machines are screwed up. And then you look at the finish line, like how are the votes recorded? And they can tie it all together on one screen and show you all the steps and changes. And you can go and look through the paper and the electronics to make sure it all matches. It's none of this crazy guesswork. And that's not hard to explain or understand. You know, and you can say, hey, these are the suburbs where people rejected so-and-so because of whatever, because these are the concentrations. We're not identifying individuals. We're just showing where these ballots were that have, like, the, you know, the split ticket voting patterns.
Hey, Steve, I'm a little dense on this stuff, but even I can understand that.
Okay, thank you. I find that reassuring, and I will step away, and thank you all for letting me.
Great.
Thank you. And if you haven't noticed, by the way, I've arrived in Columbus, Ohio, and say hi to everybody. We only ran over two police cars coming down from Cleveland, but everything's good. To talk, we can continue in tandem here. Susan Shamblin, was she the first with her hand up?
Yeah.
Susan, go ahead.
Yes, she's the next one.
I'd like to say first, I'd like just to say thank you for everyone that went in Arizona. My question is there any update on the possibility of getting the digital ballot images released?
Maybe John Brakey can help us with that.
The situation is that we're in court. Once this thing is over, my case won't be political. We'll be back in. I'm making a move right now because 1.4 million ballots will be mailed out of Maricopa to municipalities, school boards, and we preparing for the lawsuit and knowing what they're supposed to do. We're going to force them by law, by amending my lawsuit, to address this upcoming election. And by the law, you turn that inkjet on, you marry the ballot to the image. This is going to be 100% vote by mail election. And if we achieve that and I win the case, then Arizona will be the first to fall. Not like Liz said, but it will be the first state that will release 100% of its ballot images and post them online that anybody can look at them different ways. I think Florida's not far from that either, okay? We have litigation going on there. Michigan, the attorney general has jumped in because of the July 28th memo, and they're talking there. I have to litigate there. But I'm dying to get back to North Carolina. I feel a call on strong. That's one of my favorite states with the people I know there, the Reverend Spearman, the Bernsteins, you know, such as some of the greatest people I know, like Joe Siegel, lives in North Carolina. Joel, I'm coming back. Hope you we get together more and have a beer and watch you play something.
I hope North Carolina issues you a visa. And we are now going to stop our recording.